Over the last couple of weeks, probably almost 2 weeks now, there's been a story in the news about an American who was killed on a remote island in the Bay of Bengal. How many of you guys have heard this a little bit about this story in the news? Okay, so a few of you guys. I've been kind of obsessed with it. It's been super interesting. There was an American named John Chow. He was 26 years old, and he was killed on an island called the North Sentinel Island. It's part of a chain of called the Andaman Islands right there, if you kind of help you orient yourself. India on the left and Southeast Asia on the right. And it's just been this really interesting story kind of for a lot of reasons. The first is that I'd never heard of North Sentinel Island or the Sentinelese people, but the Sentinelese people are what are considered an uncontacted people, which means that they've had almost no interaction with anybody outside of their island for what anthropologists think were the last several thousand years. They actually think this tribe and several others of the little tribes in the Andaman Islands migrated from Africa over to these islands. And so just they have absolutely zero contact with anybody outside. In fact, anybody who's ever tried to come on their island, they have violently attacked. So there was several anthropologists who have tried to kind of learn about these people. And as they approach the island, the bearing gifts, the islanders come out and they're met with a volley of arrows. And these people just very aggressively opposed anybody who's come on their island. Several years ago, a fishing boat off their coast became unmoored and washed up on the shore. And the two fishermen were killed by the tribe. And then 2009, I think it was 2008, 2009, when there was the huge tsunami over there, the Indian Navy sent out a helicopter to kind of survey the damage. And when they're flying over North Sentinel Island, there's this famous picture of one of the islanders that's shooting an arrow at the helicopter. So these people have just been very remote, uncontacted, completely separate. So much so that about 30 years ago, the Indian government put it falls under the jurisdiction of the Indian government, and they put a five nautical miles radius around the island that no one is allowed to come into. It's illegal to even go to the island because these people have been so aggressive with people who have come. Another reason it's really interesting is because they speak, as best anthropologists can tell, they speak what's called a language isolate, which means the language they speak is not related to any of the other languages from the other surrounding islands, and they can't trace it to any known language that it originates from. And so these people on the island speak a completely unknown language that isn't known by anybody else in the world except for them, because no one's been able to ever go learn the language and translate. And so it's just crazy to think that there's this tribe that is totally without any modern-day technology or any real awareness of the goings-on of the rest of the world still in the world today. And so that like drew my attention to this story, which was really interesting. Another facet of this story, though, that's been fascinating is that the way this story has been told has been really interesting. So when the story first broke, what it sounded like was there was this young American adventurer who randomly went to this island and ran at these people saying, "My name is John Chow, I love you and Jesus loves you," in English. These people don't have any idea what he's saying, and they shoot him and kill him with an arrow. And so it made you wonder, what's the sanity of this person? And so almost all of the stories, especially early on, that came out were just absolutely critical of what this guy was doing and how foolish it was. And the criticisms really kind of surrounded two specific criticisms. One was that trying to go spread the gospel is kind of this colonial, imperialistic, American, white supremacist kind of idea. These people clearly don't want you there, so you shouldn't try to go. And the other idea is that these people have been so separate from the rest of society, the rest of the world around them, that they lack certain immunities to basic diseases that we have. And so he could possibly introduce one of these diseases just by his presence there, and could make these people sick and could wipe them off, wipe out their tribe. And so people called him an idiot and a fool, and that he deserved to die, and they said all kinds of horrible things with him online. Now, one of the things that is just, this is a life pro tip, this is a little extra thing for you this morning, is when you hear stories in the news, it's always a really good idea to wonder, am I hearing the full story, okay? So just anytime you hear a story that comes out, just think, that might be the story, but there also might be a lot more to this story. And as this story has come out, it's been interesting to kind of see some of the things that the way it's evolved and the more information we get. And really, it's been fascinating, this guy, John Chow, to find out that he was 26 years old. I think we have a picture of him, if you want to put that up on the screen. A young American. His dad was a first-generation Chinese immigrant who escaped, who fled as an asylum seeker to the United States. His mother's American. And when he was in high school, he heard about these people, the Sentinelese people. And his heart broke for this people that had never heard the gospel, never had an opportunity to hear the gospel, because no one had gone there and shared it with them. And so he began to orient his life and plan his life, looking for an opportunity to go and preach the gospel to this tribe. And so he went to Oral Roberts University. He graduated with a degree in sports medicine, and he became an EMT. He studied emergency medical treatment so that he could go and help these people when he got there. He went to a linguistics and cross-cultural studies organization called SIL, and he studied with them. It's one of the foremost institutes that does what they do in the world. He was a sponsored missionary. He went through a respected missionary group called All Nations that he was a part of. And he went to a training school with them to learn about contacting previously uncontacted tribes. He had previously traveled to the Andaman Islands three times in 2015 and 2016 to study the culture and begin to try to figure out what it might be like on this island. Before going to the island, he got 13 different immunizations, and he quarantined himself for almost 2 weeks to reduce the possibility of passing on any viruses to the tribe. In his personal life, he avoided any romantic relationships so that he knew that what he was wanted to do was dangerous and it was long-term, and so he didn't want to have any kind of, you know, ties to that could hurt people. And his plan is that if he was successful to contact this tribe and they received him, he wanted to live on the island for several years and learn these people's culture and learn the language to be able to share the gospel with them. And so it's a far cry from that first story that sounded like this guy went off half-cocked just kind of on this island as some kind of wingnut. And yet still, people's criticisms are still basically the same. What a fool. What an idiot. How selfish of him. You know, for people that live in our context, it can be a little bit difficult to understand. We put a really high premium on safety and a really high premium on comfort. Right? We have insurance for everything. We have health insurance, and then we have dental and eye insurance, which I don't know why dental and eye insurance is not health insurance. It seems like your teeth and your eyes are part of the body, but whatever. We got homeowners insurance. We got car insurance. We got traveler's insurance. We got business insurance. We got insurance out of everything because we want to protect everything. We've got PIN numbers, and you're supposed to have a different password for every possible online login that you could have so you can protect your identity and all these kinds of things. We put a high premium on safety. We put just a high premium on comfort, man. We have huge buildings full of couches and beds for you to go lay on and sit on so you can find the maximum posturpedic thing that will shape to your body. That's, you know, we have sleep comfort beds that you can, both people can have their sleep number to make it the most comfortable for them. And we get, I get that. I like cozy. I super like cozy, right? I was at Costco the other day with my wife, and I felt this blanket. Hannah, come here. You got to feel how soft this blanket is. And I start thinking about how my blanket at home is not nearly as soft as this blanket. And so, babe, we got to buy this blanket. And I feel this. And I'm putting it on her face. And she's like, yeah, that blanket's soft, right? We like cozy. I like having a nice bath or sitting by the fire, right, relaxing. That's important to us. And so to think about someone that's willing to go to this far-flung island away from every possible accoutrement, every technological advancement, these people have none of those things, and live with these people is a difficult idea to understand. It can seem like nothing but foolish to go and risk your life to share the gospel with a remote tribe. So what was he thinking? What was going through John Chow's mind? Well, he wrote a letter right before he paid some fishermen to, he bribed some fishermen to take him within to this island, but they wouldn't go all the way into the island because they knew about this tribe. They really feared. And so he went and he brought a kayak with him, and he took the kayak into shore. But right before he went in, he wrote this letter to his family. It says, "Brian and Mary and Mom and Dad, you guys might think I'm crazy in all this, but I think it's worth it to declare Jesus to these people. Please do not be angry at them or at God if I get killed. Rather, please live your lives in obedience to whatever he has called you to, and I'll see you again when you pass through the veil. This is not a pointless thing. The eternal lives of this tribe is at hand, and I can't wait to see them around the throne of God, worshiping in their own language, as Revelation 7, 9, and 10 says. I love you all, and I pray that none of you love anything in this world more than Jesus Christ. Soli Deo Gloria, John." You know, it's clear that John Chow had a sense of calling, a sense of destiny, that God had called him to do this. You can tell because when he says to his family, he says, "Please live your lives in obedience to whatever he has called you to. Because this is what God has called me to, and I'm going to obey it." Being obedient to God's call is what drove him to make the choices he did. I think that's one of the most fascinating parts of the story, and maybe why I've been drawn to it, is this idea of his calling. That he would feel so strongly that God gave him a mission to preach the gospel to these people that he'd be willing to risk his life. He'd be willing to risk his future. He'd be willing to risk his comfort to radically obey the call of God in his life. And you know, John Chow is not the only one. In fact, my entire Christian life, I've been attracted to these stories. I've been drawn to stories of missionaries and pastors and faithful lay people who in their time have risked, have sacrificed, and have paid the cost. In fact, we sitting here in this sanctuary, we come from a long line of people who have risked and sacrificed to bring the gospel to us, to share the gospel with the people who shared the gospel with us. Many of them we will never know. We'll never know their stories, but some of them we do. Men like Richard Wurmbrand, William Tyndale, and Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Thomas Baker, Nicholas Latimer, and Hugh Ridley. Men who were burned at the stake, who were hung, who were quartered and drawn. Men who left their families and left the safety of the love of their wives and the love of their children to go and faithfully proclaim the gospel to people. One of the comparisons that's come up this last week is the similarities between John Chow's story and Jim Elliot's story. Jim Elliot was an American minister, missionary who was killed in Ecuador, trying to share the gospel with a tribe called the Huarani tribe, and it's very similar to the Sentinelese people. They had been previously uncontacted, and anybody who tried to contact them had been met with violence. And Jim Elliot and four other missionaries have been training and studying and giving their lives to it. And they went and they contacted one of the village people, and they thought they had built a relationship. And on their next venture in, they were all met with a volley of spears, and they were killed. Their bodies washed down the river. And one of the interesting things that's been interesting to follow is the way these two stories have been told differently between 1957 and now today, 2018. In 1957, when the story of Jim Elliot's martyrdom hit the American press, he was on the cover of Time magazine and People magazine. He was venerated and celebrated as a hero and a faithful man who was doing a good thing. Yet 2018, John Chow was looked at as like a fool, as stupid, as careless. Jim Elliot's story is interesting because of how similar it is, but before he died, he wrote this: "Rest in this. It is God's business to lead, command, impel, send, or call, whatever it is you want to call it. It is your business to obey, follow, move, respond, or what have you." It's clear that for Jim Elliot, he felt the calling of God too, and he knew the right response was to obey, was to follow, was to respond. You know, when someone is willing to give their life or sacrifice so much, it lends credibility to their message. It just purifies it. They were authentic. It simplifies things. These men had a calling on their life, and they were willing to go to great lengths to be faithful to that calling. I think the reason I like these stories is because I have a calling on my life. God's called me to shepherd his people. He's called me to proclaim the gospel. He's called me to love my wife, to raise my kids in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And so when I read about these other guys, it's inspirational for me because I see how faithful they were, even to the point of death, to the calling that God had on their life. And it inspires me to be faithful in my time. It's not just me who has a calling on my life. You have a calling on your life. The calling of God is not simply for missionaries or pastors, but it's for every person who would call themselves a Christian. Every person who would call themselves a follower of God has a calling on their life. The details might be different, but the calling is the same. 2 Timothy 1:9 says, he, talking about Jesus, who has saved us and called us with a holy calling, not according to our works, but according to his own purpose and grace, which was granted to us in Christ Jesus from all eternity. You have a calling on your life. It's a holy calling to be set apart for him. And it is for his purposes, it says there. Ephesians 4:1, Paul says, I, therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called. Paul doesn't make some distinction between Christians who are called and Christians who aren't called. He assumes all of us are called. And he says that your life should reflect this calling. You should live your life. You should walk in a manner that is worthy of the calling that God has called you to. In 2 Thessalonians 1:11, Paul says to the Thessalonians again, so we keep on praying for you, asking our God to enable you to live a life worthy of his call. May he give you the power to accomplish all the good things your faith prompts you to do. God says the Spirit of God is living in you, and he's going to prompt you to do all kinds of good things for him. May God empower you to walk out those things and to fulfill every single one of them. Every single person in you, you have a calling, you have a mission, you have an assignment that God intends for you to accomplish. You know, a lot of us struggle with this idea of calling. We think that somehow we're waiting for like open heavens and the audible voice of God to say, here, go do this and talk to these people and say this thing. And yet rarely does it work out like that. In fact, sometimes we just overcomplicate the whole thing. Neil, last week in his message, he talked about that sometimes we overemphasize the specific will of God and we underemphasize the general will of God. Listen, the general calling of God is straightforward. God has called all Christians in all places to do many things, to worship him, to evangelize, to love their neighbor, to grow spiritually, to serve people, to serve him, to take dominion. The on and on, the Bible is full of these things that God has called us to do. Your specific calling is largely just you walking out your general calling in your specific circumstances. So in your life, in your time, where you live, God has called you to be faithful to all those things, and that's your specific calling. It's really pretty simple. If you have an idea to do something, study it in the Word of God, find out what God says about it. Begin to pray about that thing. Ask God to open doors. Seek counsel. And if those things come up, thumbs up, it's probably the will of God. It's not that complicated. God is inviting you into this life of mission, this life of serving him. God intends our lives to be full of purpose and meaning as we pursue him, full of adventure and excitement as you do the will of God in your life. So if God has this supernatural calling on our lives, why do so many of us have dreams that God has given us that go unfulfilled? Why has God put so many fruitful ministries on people's hearts that are unrealized? There's many people in this room that God has given you something to say, and yet it remains unsaid. God desires for you to walk in a freedom and a blessing that is so real that so many of us find so elusive. Why? I think there's probably a lot of ways to answer that question, but I think one of the main reasons is because of fear. Fear keeps us from experiencing and walking out the things God has for us. Fear of failure, fear of rejection, fear of obligation, fear of the unknown, fear of how other people are going to look at you, fear of missing out, fear of pain, fear of suffering. I want to ask you a question. I want you to think about this for a second. If you were full of boldness and courage, okay, fear was not an issue at all, what would you do? I don't mean like I would tell my boss what I really think of him. I'm talking about what would you do that you think would please God? Okay? If you were full of boldness and courage, what would you do? I want you to actually think about that for a second. If what you thought of is anything other than what you are currently doing, that's a good indication of the effect that fear is having in your life. Fear will keep you from fulfilling God's calling on your life. Which brings me to my next point. Fulfilling of your calling requires courage. You know, courage, a lot of times we're expecting some kind of welling up of some emotional sense of fearlessness. That's not really what courage is. Courage, more often than not, is just a choice. Courage is a willingness to pay the price. When you go into a store and you see something that you want to buy, you look at the price tag and you think, would I rather have my money or would I rather have this thing? And if this thing is more valuable to you than your money, then you'll pay the price, right? It's a value judgment. We make them all the time. The courage in regards to your calling by God is the same thing. It's simply a question, what do I value more? Do I value obedience to God or do I value my safety and my comfort? Do I value more what God thinks about me than what I think, than what my family thinks about me or my friends think about me or what this world thinks about me? What is more important to me? You see, that's what's so deadly about fear. It keeps us from fulfilling the calling that God has destined you for, but courage propels you to accomplish your mission. Courage propels you to fulfill those things that God has called you to. Turn to Joshua chapter 1. Joshua chapter 1, starting in verse 1, it says this. Now it came to about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Let me just give you the quick context of this story. God's people, the Israelites, had lived for over 400 years in slavery in Egypt. And God had raised up Moses to deliver them from Pharaoh, to lead them out of slavery and lead them into the promised land. And Moses did not do that. Moses did lead them out of slavery and led them to the door of the promised land. But when they got there, they were filled with fear. Because they wouldn't go in and take the land that God had promised them. God said, I have an exceedingly good land for you. This is your inheritance. This is what I promised your fathers. And now is the time for you to go in and inherit it. But they were afraid of the people that were there. They were afraid that God wouldn't deliver them. Isn't it interesting that fear kept them out of experiencing what God had for them? Fear kept them stuck there on the doorsteps to their promise. They could see it, but they couldn't experience it. That's true of so many people with their callings of God. Fear has them stuck. And so these people wandered in the desert for 40 years until every single one of the adults in that generation died. And Moses was the last of them to die. And now God is saying, I've raised up this next generation, and now Joshua, you are in charge. I want you now to do what Moses was unable to do and lead the people in the promised land. Look, that's a high calling. Moses, if you read the Bible, was a serious man of God. And so this is what God says to Joshua. Verse 2, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and as far as the great sea towards the setting of the sun, will be your territory. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. And now I want you to start listening if you haven't been paying attention. It says, just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it from the left or to the right, so that you may have success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have success. But listen, Joshua, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. This is the commissioning of Joshua. This is God calling Joshua to do something that is very exciting and very dangerous. And what you'll notice if you look carefully is that there's three times that God says to Joshua, only be strong and courageous. Moses, be strong. I mean, Joshua, be strong and courageous. Only be strong and courageous. You have to be strong and courageous. Okay, God doesn't have a stuttering problem. Anytime you see that in the scriptures and you see something where it's repeated three times, it means this is really important. He says, Joshua, I've called you to do this. And as you do this, you're going to encounter, as you obey the call I have in your life, you're going to encounter some real opposition. You're going to encounter some battles. You're going to encounter rebellion. You're going to have to speak before the people my will. Joshua, you're going to encounter times where you doubt, but don't you flinch. Don't you shrink back, Joshua. You stand fast. You be strong and courageous. Because that's the only way you're going to fulfill this calling I've put on your life. You know, courage is not an optional quality or characteristic. It's not an attribute necessary for super Christians or for pastors or for missionaries. It's a basic requirement of every person that's going to live for God. We do a pretty bad job of instilling courage in our culture. I don't know anybody who works with men who's not discouraged at the weakness of the will and the passivity of so many men in our culture. So many of our kids that are growing up today are so full of fear. I tell my kids this bedtime story. I have four kids, Wilson, Claire, Whitfield, and Juniper. And I made up this story, it's kind of like an ongoing story about their four alter egos. So it's Wilsonio the Great, Clarita the Brave, Witoto the Courageous, and Juniper, Junie the Stout Heart, okay? And it's this kind of, they're treasure hunters and they're brothers and sisters and they go around all over the world kind of discovering sunken treasure and cities of gold and all this kind of stuff. And they encounter all these problems along the way. They encounter all kinds of dangerous things, pirates and ninjas and great white sharks and collapsing buildings and all this kind of stuff. And in the middle of these stories, it's just this ongoing story. I just make it up as I go. Every night I'm telling the story. And I'll say things like, and then Wilsonio the Great drew his sword and stepped between the dragon and his sister, Clarita, you know? And they're like, yeah, like they are all in on this story. They are very excited about this story. And every night I leave it with this cliffhanger, right? Tomorrow night I'll tell you how they escaped the giant squid, something like that. And you guys remember cliffhangers, right? This is before Netflix, when you had to wait till next week to find out like who killed JR, right? And it's like this really like anticipating thing. Okay, well, I leave them with this cliffhanger, and then throughout the day, they're like, Dad, are you going to tell us tonight about chapter 5, about how they escaped the and I'm like, yeah, I'm excited about it. And they're like very excited about this thing. And I'm not just telling this story because it's fun, but I'm telling this story because I want to engender courage in them. Okay, I don't want them to grow up and be treasure hunters and travel land. I know that they're going to grow up and they're going to encounter dangerous and scary things. And I want what to come to their mind is the virtue of courage. They're going to encounter things that are going to scare them. Things are going to be difficult and they're going to encounter temptation. And I want them to have a story in their mind about the value and the importance of courage and strength. About bravery. The opposite of courage is cowardice. And we see the effects of it all over the place. We have skyrocketing rates of anxiety and depression. If you look at the last 100 years, the rates of depression and anxiety in our culture, it is something really bad is going on. as you meet with kids and talk with kids, you see that so many of them are full of fear. It's one of the things that happens when you give up on courage and you allow fear to permeate people. There's this this great line in a short story by Ambrose Bierce. It's talking about an army that's a war against another army. It's just this short line. It says the general roared, "Why have you halted? I ordered you to charge. Move forward, sir, at once." The commander said, "General, I am persuaded that any further display of valor by my troops will bring them into collision with the enemy." You know, we kind of want to be brave without ever having to meet the enemy. We kind of want to have a thin veneer of courage without ever having it have to be tested. And so we have in this culture an incredible lack of strength and courage. You know, the Bible says that cowardice is a great sin, though. Revelation 21, verse 8, it says, "But for the cowardly and unbelieving, and abominable, and murderers, and immoral persons, and sorcerers, and idolaters, and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone." God says cowardice is a sin that will damn you to hell. Why does he feel so strongly about cowardice? Because it will keep you from fulfilling what he's called you to. So where do we get courage from? How do we stir up courage in our lives? Listen, courage is not based on your abilities. You should not be courageous because you are capable for the task that's at hand. That's not where the courage to fulfill your calling comes from. Let's look back at what it says in Joshua. Start again in verse 5 where I said that I wanted to start paying attention. Look what this call to be strong and courageous is bookended by. Verse 5. "Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you." Say, "I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you." And then skip down to verse 9. "Have I not commanded you, Joshua, be strong and courageous? Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Amen. Courage comes from God being with you. Courage comes from the presence of God in your life. "Joshua, I want you to be courageous because you're going to go battle the Canaanites, and I will be with you. You're going to stand in front of the people and lead them to great exploits, and I will be with you. You're going to deal with the rebellion of Achan, and I will be with you. You're going to fight against the five kings, and I will be with you. I will be with you. I will be with you." Listen, here's an important thing. I encourage you to go study this. Almost every single time in the Bible when God calls someone to do something, what you'll find in the immediate context is his promise that he will be with you. It's remarkable. Almost every time God calls someone to do something in the scriptures, what goes right along with that calling to obey is a calling that God will be with them. It's God's presence that makes us courageous. We read earlier in Revelation 21, just a second ago, that God condemns the cowardly to hell. That word cowardice is the word dilos in Greek. It's only mentioned two other times in the scriptures, and those two times are in the same story, one told by Mark and one told by Matthew. It's the story of the disciples in the boat rowing, sailing across the Sea of Galilee. And as they're in the middle of the ocean, Jesus is asleep in the boat. In the middle of the sea, Jesus is asleep in the boat, and a huge squall comes down, and a storm comes up out of nowhere and begins to toss the boat to and fro. Most of these fishermen are men who had grown up on this sea. They were fishermen. They had seen what this kind of storm could do. They had lost friends and family members. They had seen boats sunk and crews drowned to death, and they began to be terrified. And they woke up Jesus, and this is what Jesus says in Matthew 8:26. I want to invite the band out here. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Why are you acting like cowards? Why are you dilos? You men of little faith." Then he got up and rebuked the wind and the sea, and it became perfectly calm. Why did he rebuke them and call them cowards? Because he was with them. The presence of God should extinguish our fears. The presence of God, if God is there, what more could we want? Where else could we possibly want to be? What could be more valuable than the affirmative presence of God in your life? If God is for me, who could be against me? What could it possibly matter what could come against me in my life? I don't think everybody has the presence of God in their life. I don't think God is with you as you go to disobey him, as you seek out your own self-willed life. But I think as you answer the call of God in your life, I think God promises you that's where I'll be. He'll be there when you're following him. I asked you a question earlier. I said, if you were full of boldness, what would you do different in your life? For many of you, when I asked that question, something immediately came to your mind. You knew right away, there's this thing that God's called me to. And I've been letting fear keep me from doing it, keep me from saying it. I've been letting fear hold me back from really trusting him. I want you to put that thing in front of you again. I just want you to ask yourself a simple question. God, if I obey you in this area of my life, will you be with me? Lord, if I answer the calling of your life, will you be there? Not what could possibly happen or what could go wrong. Just God, will you be there? This doesn't mean it's going to all work out exactly the best you could possibly imagine it. Exactly what you hope is going to happen is going to happen. That's not what John Chow was hoping was going to happen. But he was confident that even if it does, God, you're going to be with me. And that's where I want to be.